Well, now I am joined by Roisin Duthie, who has a documentary going out this evening. Father Frank Brown, SJ, left behind some 40,000 negatives from his 60 years of taking photographs. His best-known photographs depict the maiden voyage of the Titanic and daily life in the emerging Republic of Ireland. He also worked in England and Australia. But Father Brown was also a war photographer and took many photographs while serving as a chaplain on the Western Front. And it's this aspect of his working life that Roisin explores in the documentary that's going out on RTE One. Roisin, thank you very much indeed for coming in and joining us. He's an absolutely fascinating character, this Father Brown, and it was all discovered very much by accident, his photographic archive. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. It's completely fascinating. One of these men who was very well got, very privileged, in fact, from Cork. Parents died, his mother basically within days of his birth, and his father tragically drowned when he was a teenager. But basically, he's known in Ireland as the guy who took the photographs on the Titanic. You know, those shots on the deck of the Titanic that give you a notion of what life was like in that that doomed liner, if you like. But what really fascinated
me... He must have been on the journey from, what, Southampton to Cove?
He got off at Cove. His uncle, he was brought up by his uncle, who was the Bishop of Cloyne, the Reverend Robert Brown, who was a very strong man and indulged Frank Brown's love of photography, basically. So his uncle, when Father Brown, who wasn't yet a father, was training to become a Jesuit, his uncle decided to give him a present, which was this short stint on the Titanic, this fantastic ocean
liner.
Wasn't
he lucky it was the short stint? Didn't he get?
Well, precisely. But the really interesting thing was, because he was such a charming man and people liked him no matter, you know, where he went in life, he met this couple who were from New York on board the vessel, and they were going back to New York on this fantastic ship. And they were so charmed by him, by his conversation over dinner and so on, that they said, look, we'll take you to New York with us. So hang on for a second. We can organise that. We'll pay for it. There's no problem. And Frank Brown said, well, actually, I don't really think my superior, the provincial, will allow that. And they say, we'll go up to the Marconi room. We'll message him and we'll see what's going to happen after that. So they do that. That's why we have a shot, a photograph of the Marconi room that Father Frank Brown took. But he's not allowed. He's not allowed to say. The provincial sends a note to the boat. They get it when they arrive in Cove, which says, get off that ship. Provincial.
That's it.
And that saved
his life and gave
Absolutely.
Us this incredible record. I mean, the real aspect of his life that you focus on is when he went to war.
Yeah.
He was just ordained when he set off.
That's right.
To help in the trenches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really.
A month before the 1916 Easter Rising. The backdrop is that his uncle, the Bishop of Cloyne, was very much a persuader for war in the same way as John Redmond was. Go fight for Ireland through another, we'll get home rule faster. Everybody thought it wouldn't last terribly long, but it did go on. And for the first 2 years, a lot of men died. They needed chaplains. And Father Frank Brown decided, right, OK, I'm going to do this. So he signs up, finds himself in Folkestone, across the Channel to France, and within days, he's sent to the front line.
He's at the front line. And Roisin, describe to me the role of a chaplain on the front line. I mean, were they involved? They weren't involved in active struggle, were they? What did they do there?
No, basically these men were people who witnessed what was happening to the men. But more than that, they basically would have been very important for the officers, because if they had the respect of the men, then they would steady the line. They would keep the men's nerve. A lot of them would have been out in no man's land during battle. In fact, I think we have a clip of Edward Madigan, a historian who's written a fantastic book called Faith Under Fire, which deals with Anglican chaplains. But the role was effectively the same. I think you can play that.
Take a listen to that now.
One obvious part of their work that wasn't really experienced by anyone else was burial. And so the Catholic chaplains or chaplains of any denomination, one of the most important things they did in the Western Front was bury men, oversee burials. So after a major offensive where ground has been gained, the battlefield could be littered with literally thousands of men, the remains of thousands of men, and it would fall to the chaplain to lead working parties to bury these people. So doing that was quite traumatic. Often, and this tends to be overlooked as well, chaplains of all denominations wrote to the bereaved relatives of dead officers and men and corresponded with them. And there's ample evidence that Catholic chaplains did that, you know, quite a lot.
703,000 British soldiers were killed in World War I, And of that number, 2,300 of the dead were from the Irish Guards. So Father Frank had a lot of letters to write.
Dr. Edward Madigan speaking there. Now, Roisin, you've actually brought in some of Father Frank Brown's photographs. There's one here. It's a picture of a soldier with his bayonet out, about to go up over the trench. I mean, they're the kind of things he was dealing with there, keeping that man's courage up, getting him to go repeatedly over the trench. It's a very
absolutely
evocative.
And the other thing about it is, I think that is my favourite photograph. It's the silhouette. It's the bayonet fixed. Will he come back? What's going to happen when he goes into no man's land? Will he be hit by shrapnel? You know, what's going to happen to this man? There are so many photographs like that. And the thing about it is that's his genius, if you like. When these photographs, let me tell you a bit about how they were found. Basically, Father Brown died in 1960. He lived quite a sedate life after the war, really. He took photographs. He worked for Kodak. He was commissioned to take photographs in Ireland and England.
He worked for Kodak as a Jesuit.
In fact, he even got free film for his entire life when he worked for Kodak.
Hence the size of the archive, probably, yeah.
Exactly. 42,000 nitrate negatives. Basically, they came to light in 1985 when Father Edward O'Donnell SJ was asked to clear out a basement in a house in Eglinton Road, which was the house of his superior. And he finds this tin trunk, and written on chalk across the top of it are Father Brown's photos. He opens it and he doesn't really know what he's looking at. But in the trunk, he rings Nick Robinson, Mary Robinson's husband, because he knows that he's interested in photography. And they have a chat and they go and see this guy called David Davison, who realises what they have in front of them. They have nitrate negatives that are decomposing. Now, nitrate negatives are extremely dangerous. For a start, they're combustible. To quote Nick Robinson, they're the first cousin to TNT. And Father Eddie had them under his bed, basically. So anyway, they look at these, and David Davison, who is a restorer of photographs, he has a company here in Dublin, he discovers that these are extraordinary. And the words that come out of his mouth are Henri Cartier-Bresson, who's a very well-known French photographer, first part of the 20th century, who's basically regarded as the father of photojournalism. This is the guy who, you know, brought out the phrase.
He's involved with Magnum, wasn't he?
Exactly. The sort of decisive moment. So it was street photography. It was moving away from the idea of artistry and posed pictures to you know what was happening. But what David Davison discovered was that Father Frank Brown was doing this 10 years before Henri Cartier-Bresson came on the scene. So that gives you some indication.
It's true. I mean, I'm looking at another of your photos here, or his photos here. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, it's a man clearly just back from being, it's in a trench. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's either dead or dying, with six soldiers looking on. And you can see the expressions on their faces
Shock.
So clearly. You can see the dirt they're living in, the squalor.
If you look closely at that photograph as well, there's a fair chance that the guy who's injured is a German soldier. He's not wearing the same uniform.
Right, he's different
them.
Buttons.
Exactly. So again, you see, he's telling a story. He's giving you the action. He's bearing witness as it happens. And you see the shock there on the guy looking down with the Irish Guards label on his lapel there. You know?
Now, it's an extraordinary photograph.
Isn't it?
You wouldn't have picked that up, the button. But they, yeah, you're right. It's a totally different uniform.
So you've got that. We also have the letters, because the Jesuit archive gave us access to the letters that Father Brown wrote back to his superior, the provincial in Dublin. And they are nerve-wracking. He explains what it's like to go over the top. He says things like, I shall never forget that day. It was really important to be with my men. I don't know if I'm going to be asked to do that again, but I'm almost steeling myself. So you know he's afraid.
Yeah,
but he's
and
out
he's
there
young
and he's doing
when he's
it.
There as well. I mean,
he's
what
36.
Age? Oh, okay, right. I thought he would have been
no,
a bit young.
No, he's
there's
36
a picture.
Years
you
old.
Have a picture of him here in. Well, he's in the full army uniform with the white clerical collar at the top of it. A terribly serious, kind of slightly gawky looking man, isn't he?
I mean, very tall. He was six foot tall, and he was very nervous about, you know, will the men accept me? Because the men wanted a chaplain who'd some experience. And that was one of the first questions that they asked him when he arrived on the Western Front. Father, what was your last appointment? And he was feeling really nervous about this because he'd never been to war before. As Edward Madigan said, they had absolutely no training. They did not know what they were going to be facing into. And you became increasingly important to keep your men steady, to basically coax them out, you know, over the top, if you like, and then to deal with them and talk to their families if you died on the Western Front. And we have a wonderful interview with a man called Fred Finlay, whose uncle died on the Western Front towards the end of the war, actually. And they have a letter which they only discovered through relatives in the States from Father Frank Brown to the family explaining about Owen Finlay's death.
Really?
It's extraordinary. And the interview that Fred gives us, because he explains that, you know, his own father joined the IRA. So Owen Finlay was written out of the story, basically, because of the rhetoric of our new republic and so on. There was no place for these veterans. And suddenly, you know, you've got all of these letters coming back out. And now you've got Father Brown's collection, which you can look at online, you know.
It's an absolutely fascinating story, Roisin. You're going to have all of these photographs, the letters in the programme. That's going out tomorrow evening?
Tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock, and it's Father Brown's Forgotten War.
Father Brown's Forgotten War, 1 hour documentary on RTÉ1. Listen, thank you very much indeed for coming into us this morning with that.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTÉ Radio 1.